Welcome to the keynote stage. So my name is Mark Walsh. I'm the founder of this conference and part of the leadership team with Daniela and Manel. We have got quite a feast, quite a treat in store for you. The main stage doesn't have all the top names on. Some of them are spread out for various logistical reasons, but there are some awesome presenters on this stage. This stage is also sponsored by Alain Stefani. When we first had the idea of getting sponsors, I basically said, I won't take anyone as a sponsor unless I love what they do, because otherwise it doesn't have any integrity for me. I didn't know who Alain Stefani was, but I met her in Berlin. Someone said, oh, she's an intimacy teacher, she's an ex-sex worker, best-selling author in Germany. And I said, okay, well, I'll meet her. And I met her. And as soon as I met her, I felt at ease. I felt like, wow, this is a person who's playful, but also a deep listener. This is a woman who's a real leader. Since I've seen her work with people in very, you know, around trauma, around intimacy, around very difficult areas, men and women, I've come to regard her as a friend, actually. Like, I love her. So go to her website and check it out. It's Alain, I-L-A-N, Stefani, S-T-E-P-H-A-N for November, I. AlainStefani.com. There's an offer there called Love and Rage, which is as juicy as it sounds. You'll also find links in the descriptions for the videos below. Okay, welcome everyone to the Embodiment Conference. Welcome back to many of you. It's Stephen Mark on the night shift again. This time we are hosting Tara Brack. This is a real treat. I think, like many of you who've listened to her podcast or heard her rain meditation, she is a founder and guiding teacher of the Insight Meditation Community in Washington, best-selling author of Radical Acceptance and some other books out there, Radical Compassion. One of the senior meditation teachers in the United States, just known for her warmth and compassion. And I said, I definitely want to host this one. I'm going to be joining in the meditation myself. So really looking forward to this. Tara, I'll shut up. Over to you.
Wow. Thank you, Mark. Thank you, Mark and Steve, for hosting us tonight. And welcome, friends. I'm just so glad to be with you. And first off, just want to honor your participation. It gives me hope that this conference is so popular right now. We're in such a time of just global trauma and suffering. And I truly believe that embodied, open-hearted presence really is the medicine we need. So, and as we know, we each have this deep conditioning when life gets difficult to exit stage left. We dissociate and disconnect from that aliveness. I thought I'd share that one meditation master was asked to describe the world, and his response was lost in thought. And many of you know, you might know the line from James Joyce, who said, Mr. Duffy lived a short distance from his body. And so it is that we spend a lot of our moments, you might think back on today or the prior hours, like how much were you spinning in a mental realm? And how much are we actually here, you know, in contact with our life and our heart? So in that spirit, I thought we'd take a moment right from the beginning and just pause together. I'd like to invite you in this pause to close your eyes just to bring your attention inwards so you can feel your body with your eyes closed and feel yourself here. The poet Dorothy Postlewaite says, or Martha Postlewaite says, do not try to save the whole world or do anything grandiose. Instead, create a clearing in the dense forest of your life. Create a clearing in the dense forest of your life. And wait there patiently until the song that is your life falls into your own cupped hands and you recognize and greet it. Only then will you know how to give yourself to this world so worthy of rescue. Create a clearing in the dense forest of your life. So just sense yourself here and that we're creating a clearing to kind of come out of that dense forest of thinking and come into the aliveness of our bodies and the tenderness of our hearts. And if you'd like to open your eyes, please do. So in this session, we'll explore the rain practice. This is a weave of mindfulness and compassion that can help us when we get emotionally stuck. It can help us come back home to our body and our heart, to wisdom, to compassion. And the acronym, as some of you know, of RAIN is Recognize, Allow, Investigate, and Nurture. And more than any other meditation, so many have told me that they say RAIN saved my life. Found it invaluable at work, at home, and now for many, work and home have merged. I thought I'd share a personal story about what motivated me to write Radical Compassion, which is the guidebook to RAIN. And it happened after my mom had come to live with my husband and me. She was 82, and it was a super busy stretch. And so for the first bunch of months, I was caught about anxiety to prepare talks I was going to give or teachings, and then guilt I wasn't spending enough time with her. And I remember one day she kind of came into my office wanting to give me an article she thought I'd be interested in, and I was fixated on my computer screen. I barely looked up, and she just quietly put it down and walked off. And I turned and looked at her retreating body and thought, wow, you know, I don't know how long she'll be here. And I decided to pause and do RAIN then. And so I did it. I you know, recognized that all the anxiety and guilt in me, and allowed it to be there. And I investigated and just got in touch with the squeeze in my body, and just brought some nurturing, you know, just reminded myself to trust my heart, that I loved her and that the teachings would flow and things were okay. And I did this a number of rounds. And I want to tell you that it calmed me enough so there really was more presence when I was with her. For our giant salads we'd have at dinner, or the walks by the river. And she died not that long, I mean, 3 years later. And of course, the deepest of grieving, but not regret. You know, because I realized that, in a sense, RAIN had saved my life moments with her. I'd been able to show up. And I share this because for so many of us, the times we most need mindfulness and compassion are the times that we're really kind of hooked and least able to pause, like busy getting ready for the next thing, or anxious about something, or confused or angry. And those are the times we need mindfulness, but we can barely remember how to get back here. And that's why having a practice like RAIN can be so helpful, because we actually have a four-step process that we can remember. Now, just to say, in reality, when we start practicing it, sometimes not always such a discrete sequence, and there's all sorts of nuance, but in general, it gives us a way to come back home. And I think it helps to consider what's happening when we're stuck, that we're in a kind of, it's a limbic hijack. You know, our survival brain is taken over and we're actually in a trance. And by that, I mean, and you know, and you can kind of sense when you've been, you know, caught in anger, anxiety, that the world shrinks and we're fixated on what's going to go wrong. And we've kind of lost contact with a wiser perspective, with our compassion, with any sense of flexibility. We're very small and tight. And neuroscience can now show us what's happening when we're in this trance, this limbic hijack, how in those moments, the limbic system is activated and the prefrontal cortex, which is where that's really the correlated with mindfulness, with empathy, with perspective, with executive functioning. The prefrontal cortex, when we're in that hijack, is deactivated. There are three common ways that limbic trance appears, and I'm just going to name them. We're going to kind of focus in then. And one of the ways that's really a call for RAIN is when we're caught in anxious, obsessive thinking. We're disembodied, we're fixated on what's going to go wrong or what's already wrong. There's a story about a woman who sends her son an email and it says, "Start worrying, details to follow." And I've always loved that because it's kind of the way it gets that we're like anxiety looking for something to land on. And most of what's happening is our thoughts are just incessant circling. So that's the first expression of a limbic trance. It's kind of a call saying, pause, see what's going on. The second is that when we get insecure, our survival brain tends to blame others. And that's, we can see it. There's just more blaming and more conflict going on when life's not going our way. We tend to make others wrong, to create a bad other. And there's a story I heard recently of a woman in a job interview, and her interviewer is asking her, well, tell me, what do you think your greatest character defect might be? Her response, honesty. And he says, honesty? I wouldn't consider honesty a defect. And her reply, I don't care what the hell you think. And so, okay, silly, ridiculous example. And when we're hijacked, what we say and what we do happens quickly because the survival brain is into fast action. It's really the prefrontal cortex is actually slower. So we do things we regret and we know it. We say and do things we regret. Now, often the trance that we're in circles around beliefs. We're very identified with our beliefs and we're threatened when people don't agree with us. So that can trigger the limbic hijack. You know, there's a saying that the world is divided into those who think they're right. And that's the whole saying. It's like that. And this is a cartoon I saw, where somebody's saying to somebody else, you know, I can't hear you over the sound of how right I am. And I bring this up right now, this second kind of limbic hijacked of making an enemy and of right and wrong. Because it's going on in such a violent way that's creating so much dividedness in our world right now. And if you look into your own life, you can sense, well, where are you creating an enemy other? And the reality is that beliefs can lead to actions that are quite harmful. And so it's really easy for when we disagree with somebody for them to become an enemy. And yet it brings up so much fear and hatred that no matter how progressive our beliefs, when we're in that hijack of I'm right and of bad other, we're shrinking and we're disconnecting from a larger sense of being that will allow us to then act from more wisdom and compassion. So this is the second type of limbic trance when we're caught in bad other. Okay, so there's anxiety and fear thinking, making the others wrong. And then the third way, turning against ourselves. The sense of, you know, when we get hijacked, thinking something's wrong with me, I am bad. And my friends, this is so pervasive. We know it. There's so much suffering in turning on ourselves, in feeling shame or badness. Sometimes it's a kind of chronic sense of falling short. Many of us know that sense of it's just never quite enough. It's like, again, I'm sharing my favorite cartoons tonight. It's like the cartoon that the dog is saying to his psychiatrist, you know, it's always good dog this and good dog that, but is it ever great dog? You know, it's like that. It's never enough. But sometimes this, what I call the trance of unworthiness, is really acute. And we're living with a deep sense of failure. And this is a profound limbic hijack where we're really caught in shame and living in a very imprisoned small place that stops us from being able to be intimate with others because there's a sense, well, others will find out, you know, they'll end up finding out and then rejecting me. And it stops us from taking risks at work or being creative. Really, when we're down on ourselves, we can't relax. I think of it like the most fundamental truths are the ones that we forget. And one is that you can't be happy. You can't really live in a loving way if you're turned against yourself, if you're at war with yourself. And I often think of one friend was with her mother when her mother was dying, and her mother was in a coma. And at one point she woke up from the coma and she looked her daughter right in the eye and she said, "All my life, I thought something was wrong with me." And then she closed her eyes and she died soon after. But these were her last words. And for this woman, it was kind of a wake up to kind of the tragedy of living in that trance of unworthiness, living in that sense of something's wrong with me, how many life moments we lose feeling I'm bad in some way. So our society, contemporary society, actually reinforces this kind of alembic hijack, the trance of unworthiness. There's little innate sense of belonging to the earth, to families, to community. And as we know, one of the reasons we're gathering to this very body. So it reinforces the trance of unworthiness. And the most toxic amplification of not of something's wrong, not belonging, comes from bias. It comes from institutionalized violence against non-dominant populations. If you are a member of a non-dominant population, you're getting the message in countless ways of being inferior. Race is so big right now, and there's such a centuries-long wound in this country, in the United States, around race. It's the greatest wound we have. Toni Morrison says, in this country, being American means being white. Everyone else has to hyphenate. So we're talking about this limbic hijack that keeps us from being really at home with ourselves. And whether it's deep shame or chronic self-judgment, if we're turned on ourselves, if we're turned on ourselves in some way, we're forgetting our basic goodness. We're forgetting the aliveness and awareness and the love that really is who we are. And the Buddha taught that the very core of suffering is not remembering who we really are. I have a friend, a palliative caregiver, who's been with tens of thousands of people as they're dying. And she reports that the greatest regret of the dying is, I didn't live true to myself. You know, I lived caught in others' expectations, distancing from others, blaming myself, but I didn't live true to myself. So what I'd like to do is look at how rain can help us live true, help us shift from reactivity, these kind of limbic hijacks when we're blaming others or blaming ourselves or caught in anxiety cycles, how we can wake up from that hijack and really respond to our life from a wise, steady heart. So again, RAIN, acronym, recognize, allow, investigate, and nurture. And one of the most important parts of RAIN, which I'm going to be emphasizing as I share a few examples with you, comes right after you've done those four steps. And I'm sharing this with you because people miss this. And yet this is where the real radical transformation comes. That we do these four steps of recognize, allow, investigate, and nurture. And then there's what I call after the rain. And you might think of it like a real rain when it comes down and it nourishes the earth. It's right after the rain that we see the fresh blossoming, the new life. Well, it's right after you do the practice. If you attend to the quality of presence that's there and sense the shift, there's a shift in identity. There's a shift from the anxious self, let's say, to much more of a space of tender awareness. there's a shift back to who you really are. And the more you get familiar with those moments of after the rain, the more you start returning again and again to your true nature. So it's a very deep practice. Okay, let me share an example. I'm going to share a couple, and then we're going to practice rain together. In this first example, this is a woman that came to work with me years ago when I was still an active psychotherapist and also teaching meditation. And she was taking meditation classes too. And she was really upset because her teenage daughter, I think she was a senior in high school, her grades were tanking. She was smoking a whole lot of pot. And this very angry, defended distance had grown up between them now. So she could barely say anything to her daughter without her daughter disappearing. And she felt responsible because she was working full time and felt like she hadn't been paying enough attention, but she was also really angry. So we started rain together, and the R of rain was simply recognizing the anger. And I encourage with the R of rain to mentally whisper it, anger, anger. Just as in Vipassana, we mentally note what's going on. Or you can even whisper it out loud. And there's a lot of research that has shown that when you name the emotion, just in naming the emotion, it starts to activate the prefrontal cortex and quiet the limbic system. And so right away at the beginning of rain, you're beginning to come back online again, so to speak. So recognizing for her was just naming anger and the allowing. What I often encourage is to say, this belongs, or it's okay, this too, or yes. In some way, coach yourself to just let it be there. I like the words, this belongs, and many people have found the same. It's kind of like saying, okay, these are the current waves in the ocean, and they're here, and they'll change, but this moment they belong. It's a honest acknowledging of reality. So the A creates a pause where we acknowledge reality. Allow it, this belongs. And then for her, the investigating, she's feeling the anger in her body, all that heat and swelling and kind of explosiveness. And when I invited her, just let it be as much as it was, then she started feeling that under it, there was fear. You know, she's afraid that her daughter was gonna ruin her life. And the fear, she could feel the squeeze of fear in her belly, in her chest. Again, the investigating is very somatic. It, in fact, there's no transformation unless it comes into the body. So she felt that fear in her body, and underneath the fear, she felt this deep shame that it's my fault. My fault. And that sinking, hollow feeling of shame was really familiar. So I asked her, how long have you felt that it's your fault? And she said, you know, as long as I can remember, my whole life, I felt like I was failing in some way. I was letting the people in my life down. And as she said that, there was this wave of sorrow. And I think of this as a kind of soul sadness when we see the landscape of our life and recognize again how many life moments we lose to being caught, being hijacked by that sense that something's wrong with us. So that's what happened to her. She felt that wave of sorrow. And then the last part of investigating, well, what does this part need? You know, how does this part want you to be with it? And she said, well, it needs to know her to know she's doing her best, that she has a good heart. So that was the nurturing. And when I guide people in nurturing, I often encourage putting the hand on the heart. There's more and more evidence, both clinical and research evidence, that when we put our hand on our heart, the warmth actually in some way affects the vagal nerve and actually creates some comfort, changes the chemicals that are moving through us. It's really nurturing. So I find it really, really helpful for myself. She put her hand on her heart and she sent that message. She sent that message of you care, you love her, you know, you're doing your best. And after the rain, after she had done that, the shift was she felt like she was no longer living inside this angry, failing self. She was more living inside a space of real tenderness, of compassion. So over the week, she did several rounds. Rain is rarely a one shot. You know, it took us many rounds to build our patterning. So to deconstruct, it takes many rounds too. But each time she was getting more and more of a sense of finding her way back. And after a bit, she started to be able to see her daughter through fresh eyes and start to see her fears and approach her differently with more understanding, more space. So they actually were able to start connecting and talking again. Rain reconnects us with who we are. It really takes us home to the best of who we are. But sometimes what we're encountering, and I'm noticing this a lot in current times, the pain is so great, the trauma is so strong that we can't actually begin with rain. We can't begin with recognizing and allowing because it's just, it's beyond what Dan Siegel calls the window of tolerance. It's too much. So in those cases, the place we begin is with the end of rain, the nurturing. We need to take some time to create enough safety, to calm down our nervous system, to find enough ease so we actually can practice the mindfulness and compassion of rain. I have a friend, some of you may have heard of him, Frank Ostasevsky, who's a wonderful teacher, writer. He was the founder of Zen Hospice. And he was describing working with someone who was dying of colon cancer. Someone who was like felt like a father to him. And he was by his side. And this man asked Frank to teach him how to mindfully be with what was there. And so Frank put his hand on this guy's belly and to support him and to help him breathe and just open to what was there. And he said, oh, too much pain, too much pain. So then Frank moved his hands a little further away from the man's belly. And he said, no, too much, can't be with it. Then he moved it further away. And the man began to breathe more freely. And then the man said to him, rest in love, rest in love. And that mantra carried him. He was able to just remind himself to rest in love. And then he could be more there with this living, dying world he was moving through. Rest in love. And I think that's such a beautiful reminder to us that sometimes we can't just be with the difficulty. It actually could be re-traumatizing if there's not enough balance and stability. And that first we need to resource ourselves, nurture ourselves. And it might be for a few minutes or a few months. You know, it's all organic. It has its own timetable. But then when there's enough balance or stability, or perhaps we can do rain with another person, a therapist or a healer, because that helps to hold a container, then we can begin to do it. One of the things I want to encourage you about as you explore rain, and again, my book Radical Compassion is a good guidebook because it explores how you can bring rain to so many different experiences, is that you can also do it with a partner. You can get a rain partner. In fact, we've got hundreds and hundreds of people in our teacher training and in different communities around the world that have decided they want to meet every other week with a partner, and just so they have a regular way of practicing, and it creates real intimacy with another person. I have guidelines on my website. Just go on my website and look for rain. It creates a kind of intimacy. It helps us be accountable and stick with the process, and actually takes it deeper sometimes because that container of another person allows us to really drop in. So I just wanted to let you know about that. There's a lot of ways you can do it. I know when I teach workshops, I'll often have people get in groups of four and you know, have them share, recognize and allow together, and then drop into the investigating and nurturing, and then after the rain, and then share again. And it's so powerful. So this can be part of a collective practice too. One of the main things I wanted to emphasize as we speak, so I feel like we're in these times that it's so divided, and we so deeply need to increase our sense of connection and trust with one another, that rain opens our heart in a way that naturally is conducive to that. And so I wanted to share a final story, and then we'll practice together. And this was an executive at an IT firm who is very known for his brief fuse. You know, when his anger started causing real problems with his marriage and with his teens, that's when he was practicing mindfulness, and he asked to have some sessions on how he could bring rain to anger. And rain is very, very powerful with anger. You can do a rain on the sidelines in a slow way. You know, you can remember an angry time and bring it to the sidelines and practice for the next, getting ready for the next encounter. But if you're going to do rain on the spot, it has to be what I call a light rain. And you have to practice that on the sidelines too, to be ready. But I taught him a kind of a light rain where he'd recognize the cues to him getting angry, the kind of thoughts and feelings he'd have. And he'd just recognize it by naming anger. And then he'd allow, just let the experience be there, pausing. He'd investigate by feeling where it was in his body, and it was generally in his chest, a kind of full feeling there. And nurturing was simply saying, it's okay, it's okay, it's okay. He'd pause for a moment for after the rain to notice if there was a shift. Well, here's what he reported. He said that now when he was triggered, 25% of the time, he didn't say something he regretted. And that's really improvement. 25% of the time he did not go and then behave in a way that he really felt bad about. He shared one of those times. He was meeting with a project manager, and the project manager admitted that his team had fallen behind, and he actually took responsibility. He said that he'd actually let some things himself fall through the cracks. And so as this guy that I've been telling you about was listening, he felt the rising irritation because it was an important project to him. And now typically he would have pounced, but instead he just said, okay, anger, pause, feel it in his body. It's okay. And he's a little more presence, and he started paying attention to this guy as he was talking, and he took him in, and he was really appreciating his honesty and his commitment. And so not only did he not pounce, he said, you know, I'm sure you're doing the best you can. Well, this took the manager entirely off guard. I mean, this was very much of a deviation from this guy's typical behavior. And he said to him, you know, I didn't plan to say this. And this manager had tears in his eyes. He said, but, you know, my wife has stage 4 breast cancer, and I have 2 teens, and it's just been a really rough time. And this man told me, you know, he said, Tara, we hugged. He hadn't done this in the workplace. He said, we hugged and both of us had tears. And he said, a few months ago, I would have unwittingly added to this man's burden. And there we were hugging. It was one of my saddest and best moments. It was like I had found my way back to being a real human. I heard this and I thought to myself, you know, what if we could all pause a bit for even a light rain before reacting? I mean, many of you know this wisdom of be kind. Everyone you meet, including yourself, really, is fighting a hard battle. And it's so true that every one of us is living with vulnerability, living with uncertainty, living with fears. There's a very brief vignette I like to share because it helps me so much in remembering this. And that's that if you're imagine you're in the woods and you see a little dog by a tree, and you go over to pet the dog, but the dog just lurches at you with its fangs bared, and you shift from, like, you know, thinking this is a cute little dog to really being angry. And then you see the dog has a paw that's caught in a trap. And then you shift again. And you might not get real close, but your heart's going, oh, I'm so sorry. Well, it's really like that when you are behaving in ways that you really hate or that you really judge, whether it's addictive behavior or lashing out at other people or selfish behavior, there's something underneath, some unmet need, some hurt, some fear, something. And when others are behaving in ways that we think are ugly or bad, underneath that's usually a hurting person. So what if we remembered that? We'd still make boundaries. We wouldn't go and pet the dog, you know, because we don't want to get bit. We make our boundaries, but our heart doesn't have to shut down. And this is the gift of learning to pause and deepen our attention to ourselves and to others before we act. And the most amazing thing about these brains, as many of you know, is neuroplasticity. We can change our patterns. This is the hope in our individual life and also as a species, that right now, societally, we are caught in a limbic hijack. There's a huge amount of unprocessed fear, and it's bringing out all the violence, all the dividedness. And what's being called for as many people as know how to be able to pause, each in our own lives, and learn how to get in touch with our bodies and bring presence and nurturing to what's inside us so we can respond from more wholeness. So rather than blaming others because we hate their hate, we can actually come back to our own hearts. I know for myself that as many know, we're leading up to a major election here in the United States. There's been a huge amount of tension and hostility. And I'd watch myself get into that hijack of badness out there. And I more and more would just stop and do rain in those moments where I'd recognize my blaming and my anger. And I'd allow it to be there. And then I'd investigate and find in my own body that under the anger was fear for our world. And under that fear was a kind of grieving for all the suffering that's going on. And under that grieving is care. And if you can use rain to get down to that place where you care, then your actions will be the kind of actions that actually transform the world. Mother Teresa says that we suffer when we forget our belonging to each other and to our inner life. And so rain, and when I say rain, mindfulness, compassion can be our pathway back to remembering our belonging in a way that really lets us respond to our world with care. So let's practice a little. Wherever you are. And I heard right at the beginning, Mark was naming some of the places that are plugged in right now. And it's just so wonderful to feel you from different continents. But all of us together, just to practice a light rain right now, you might bring to mind some situation in your life where you get reactive, where you know you get into that limbic hijack. And it could be a hijack where you turn on yourself or you turn on someone else, so you get caught in fear. Some situation where you'd like to be able to create a clearing, or you'd like to be able to wake up from that trance. So you might bring something to mind. It may have to do with another person, something going on in a relationship. may have to do with work. It may have to do with your health, with an addictive process. Something that brings up anger, fear, judgment, but not trauma. It won't help you right now to go to something traumatizing. It may have to do with your reaction and distress about the world. Whatever it is, take some moments to enter the experience. You might remind yourself of a recent time when you got triggered. So let yourself visualize the scene where you were, the room you're in, if another person's involved, seeing their face, hearing their words. There may be an image from the world if it has to do with the wider society. Something that brings up reactivity. And sense into what the worst part of this is for you. What you're most afraid of, what's most upsetting. Just to help you get in touch with it. The R of Rain, recognize what's happening. As you reflect on the situation, just notice what is most predominant and mentally name it with a silent or out loud whisper. It might be fear, anger, agitation, distress. And then allow it. Intentionally make space for it. You might just say yes, or this belongs, or let be. Just acknowledging this is the reality of the moment. This is the experience of the moment. And then begin to investigate. And the key to investigating is curiosity and gentleness. So call on that. And again, just sense what's the worst part about the situation. You might sense what you're believing when this is going on. What are you believing is going to go wrong? What are you believing about yourself or another person? Just so you get the background belief that's really creating the feelings. And then investigate and find out where you feel the emotions or feelings most in your body. And check your throat, your chest, your belly. And wherever you feel the most feelings, might help to put your hand there just to start keeping company. You're bringing in some nurturing right at this point. Notice what you're aware of. Is there heat or tightness, pressure? Ache, squeezing, twisting. To help you get in touch with the somatic experience, you might let your face express what you're feeling. Just experiment. And your posture too. Maybe your shoulders slump, maybe your jaws clenched, whatever. And as you do that, find out where the feelings are strongest in your body again. Feel it. Breathe with it. Take the chance to really touch into where you feel most vulnerable. And just speaking right to that vulnerable place, sense, what do you most need? How do you want me to be with you? Does this place in you want understanding? acceptance, company, forgiveness, love. And take a full breath and sense that you're inviting your high self, your most awake heart mind, so that you can really inhabit that as you nurture this vulnerability. Sense that the most awake part of your heart is doing the nurturing. And just sense what you most want to offer to that vulnerability. You might, again, feel your hand touching your heart. You might vary the touch, so it's really tender that you're communicating with the pressure itself. I care, I'm here. You might sense what message would really be comforting, would be healing. It may be simply, you're okay, or you're enough, or trust yourself, trust your goodness. Or it might be, I'm here and I'm not leaving. Or maybe if there's fear there, you might say, thank you for trying to protect me, but I'm okay. Or maybe that deep reminder, you're held in love. If it feels at all difficult to offer care to yourself, it's just as good to call on some larger source of loving, perhaps the love and wisdom that comes through a friend or a grandparent, a teacher, a healer, a spiritual figure. You might imagine that being's caring gaze, and they're very pure loving flowing in through your hand into the vulnerable place inside. As part of nurturing, let your deep intention be to let in love, to let the vulnerability be bathed in love, to let the love into the cells and the spaces between the cells, washing through your entire body and being. Now, bringing the attention fully to what is right here. This is after the rain, and there may be a small shift, or there may be a profound shift, but whatever it is, notice the quality of presence that's emerged. Perhaps to some degree, there's more of a sense of space, maybe more kindness, more inner freedom. Just notice the shift from the identification when you started of maybe a fearful self or an angry self. And sense what's called non-identification, or just this openness and tenderness that's here. And know that more than any story you tell you yourself about yourself, this awareness is really the truth of your being. You might widen your attention now and sense that you're practicing this mindfulness and compassion with thousands of other people around the world. So just sensing our shared heart space, all of us, and just the power and goodness of that, that this heart space can include ourselves and each other, and really all life everywhere. The earth, our mother, all life everywhere. Just to feel our shared prayer that all beings everywhere might realize this essence of loving awareness and live from loving awareness. And as you're ready, you might take a few full breaths to open your eyes. And thank you. I know we never know what we're signing up for with any of these sessions, and I really want to honor your willingness to explore and open in this way. Thank you.
Thank you, Tara. Seeing the thanks coming in on the chat. Beautiful healing. Thank you so much. Lots of heart shapes. Gorgeous, beautiful. Let you see some of that. It's nice to take it in sometimes, huh? Okay, so thank you. I feel much more chilled. And I hope you enjoyed that too, Steve. Maybe we could put Tara's website in there in a moment when the chat slows down a little bit. Put Tara's details in and recommend Tara's books. So if you want to have a little chat with someone, you can go to the coffee breaks now. So we have through the portal, top right, click on the three little dots and then a red coffee cup. That means you can go speak to actual human beings who you'll be put in a Zoom breakout room with. And it's really just one of the sweetest things about the whole conference, actually. Sounds crazy, but chatting to other human beings about what you've heard and what you've practiced. The Facebook group is incredibly gentle and kind for a Facebook group. It's really quite civilized. So if you want to join us on the Facebook group, then it's quite fun. It's got a nice vibe to it. It's not quite the same as a lot of social media out there. So do check that out. And of course, the library of recordings. If you want to support us, someone asked me yesterday, they said, your Zoom account's free, right? I said, no, it was £75,000 just for the Zoom account. So do help us out. And also just means you can digest all this great stuff and listen to it back. There's so much good stuff on. There's another meditation on in an hour on the meditation channel from my friend Lawrence. Many, many great speakers coming up. If you haven't caught Gabor Mate or Peter Levine or any of these guys, you know, well worth catching. It's all free for 48 hours. But yeah. If you want to digest it, and I recommend the conference library, so digest it in your own time. Okay, Steve, anything I haven't mentioned?
You've pretty much got it all.
My wife's complaining I spend more time with you than with her at night, Steve, now. So it's nice once again to be on the night shift with you, Steve. Thanks for looking after us. Much appreciated.
It's great. Always a pleasure.
You're real... Yeah, you really serve the conference, Steve, so let me just acknowledge that. Okay, so we're going to go back to Tara for her top embodiment tip, her final word that we will put in the book. Tara, back to you.
Oh, first, I'm loving listening to you two and feeling the warmth of how you're holding this, so I wanted to offer you both a real bow and thanks. And I want to share something personal. Today, my second granddaughter was born just early this morning, and I was offering a blessing. You know, I was meditating and offering her a blessing, and I was just saying, what do I most want to wish for her? And it was the same thing I offered I was with my daughter-in-law when my first granddaughter was born, and the same blessing came up. And it's really what I want to share with all of you, which is, may we trust the goodness, the love and the awareness that's our essence, and may we see it in each other and let each other know, because it helps to bring it out. We all forget and we need each other to help us remember. So thank you, friends. It's just a total pleasure to be with you. Many blessings.
Congratulations, Tara. Thank you, everyone. Thank you for sitting with us, and we'll see you on the conference as it goes forward.